sort of why we're sitting here together and we're going to St. Chris's. Raise your hand if you don't have an answer yet about why you're going to do it, why you're going to chant alone. Do you have an answer? You don't yet?
I don't.
Already. This will give me more time to think about what I want. Because it's very important to get one's intention correct.
Thank you.
Ananta Koti Vaishnavindi ki is confounded charge of Srila Prabhupada ki. Premsi Gohosi Krishna Chaitanya Pumalachananda Sriya Dvaita Gadadha Srivasari Goa Bhaktivindi ki. Sisi Radha Krishna Gopinath Naimakunda Radhavindi Giri Govardhan ki. Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Sri Navadvipa Dham ki jai, Ganga Mayi ki jai, Jamuna Mayi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki jai. All glories to Samadha Bhaktis. All glories to Samadha Bhaktis. All glories to Samadha Bhaktis. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Itai Gaur Bhimanandi Hari Hari Bho. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Dastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Pranta Samanatana Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pucharane Namaste Sasani Vadi Vishpati Vizitani. Perhaps we could put a light on. Well, I think we should wait. Let's maybe take a little time. Let's hold on to it for now. Yeah, put a light on. There's a pastime that I would like to read. We don't have a book, unfortunately. Do we have the 11th canto somewhere? Part 2. Otherwise we can use the monster. Now, in the 11th canto, so many things are discussed. Very, very philosophical canto of the Bhagavatam. There's so much about jnana, about knowledge, and Krishna himself speaking to Uddhava, who is a great intellectual, who was taught by Brihaspati himself. When Brihaspati saw the potential of this student, the great spiritual master of the devatas, the demigods, he himself wanted to instruct him because of Uddhava's special potential. And then later on, just before Krishna departs from this world, he leaves this world, Krishna gives Uddhava some instructions, and those instructions are called the Uddhava Gita. So in this Uddhava Gita, there's so much philosophy. It's somewhat different from the Bhagavad Gita, because Arjuna is a warrior, he's an action man, and Uddhava is more an intellectual, so the type of instruction is somewhat different. And in the Uddhava Gita, it is much more direct as to the conclusion, even though similar subjects are discussed. And the conclusion is that every path, every spiritual path, ends in bhakti, in devotion. This is the topmost, this is the pinnacle of spiritual path. And tomorrow in the presentation that we'll give, we'll speak something about why bhakti is the topmost of paths. It is not just a religious fanaticism. We think this is a specific reason. But we'll speak more about that tomorrow. But in any case, in the Uddhava Gita, Krishna shows so directly that every path, whether it's karma, the path of working hard, or the path of jnana, using one's intelligence to experience himself as separate from his body or her body. It's using the intelligence to filter the sense of self and change it. Because, as I may have mentioned, yes, I can't remember anymore, but when I had a tooth extracted, and And then you look at your tooth, and you, not that I'm recommending this as a process of self-realization, but if it so happens, you, when the tooth is pulled, you look at it, and you see, well, this is clearly not me, because I'm still here, although, and the tooth is there. Well, that's something like what the path of jnana is. It's a process of neti, neti, neti. This isn't me. This isn't me. And if we did it on a gross level, we would pull out each and every one of our teeth. This isn't me. And then our tongue and our left ear and then our right ear and our eyelashes. And one by one, it would be quite a torturous process if enacted on the physical platform. But it's more an intellectual process. It's very, very deep and extremely subtle, where one has to be so much in sattva-gun, the mode of goodness, and non-interacting with the material world, that one can perceive the difference between the different aspects of his thoughts, the mind, the intelligence, and ultimately even the false ego, as not him, as not the person himself, him or her, to be politically correct. But Krishna shows in the Uddhava Gita that even if one takes to that process, the ultimate ending of that is when one finds oneself as eternal, then one gives himself to Krishna as his part and parcel. As his part. Does anyone know why we say part and parcel as opposed to just part or just parcel? We say we're part of Krishna. Yes.
Connected.
Yes, we're connected. And the parcel, we could be part and not individual, but a parcel implies an individual unit. So we are all individuals. Is there anyone in this room doesn't think they're an individual? Raise your hand, which will defeat you just by you doing that. Because only... because if we were all one, then if one person became realized, then we would all become realized. And if one person became unrealized, then... but that wouldn't be possible. But in any case... So there is one chapter, the 22nd chapter. The Uddhava Gita is quite long too. It goes from the 6th chapter of the 11th canto to the 29th chapter. And in the 22nd chapter, which is quite in the middle of the Uddhava Gita, Krishna is explaining a jnana process. And the chapter is entitled... enumeration of the elements of material creation, because the idea is to show that here's the material creation. It's composed of earth, it's composed of the basic ingredients, earth, water, fire, etc. There are basic elements of material nature, and they're not us. We're not actually the soul itself, me, who is eternal, is not actually a part of the material existence. It's separate. The soul is separate from material existence. So, towards the end of this chapter, Gopal, could you get me a little water, just regular water? Thank you. So, towards the end of the 22nd chapter, Krishna is describing that it is possible to experience yourself as completely different from this world of matter. This is the process of jnana. So that nothing that occurs in the world of matter can affect you. Nothing. So this is what Krishna is explaining. And then he says... then he says, very interesting things. But one of them is, let me put it in the form of a question. What is it that keeps us entangled in the world of matter, and therefore having to suffer everything that occurs to matter, even though we ourselves are eternal and by nature full of bliss. What? Just wait 1 second. Everyone is so eager. But because I'm a teacher, you have to raise your hand. Otherwise, we have many corners in this room. And you think I'm kidding, you'll see. Everyone except Gopal. So what is it, if we're separate from matter, if we don't have anything to do with material existence, which one can actually perceive it, not just intellectually understand it. And we all, Krishna gives it in the Bhagavad Gita such a simple example to help us understand the point when he says, Komaram Jovaram Jara, that we pass in this, we all experience having been in little bodies and then bigger bodies and then bigger bodies and then bigger bodies and then aging bodies and then aged bodies. And but we all experience that there's, that me, the person, doesn't change throughout all the changes of body. And if I am my body, well then, which body am I? Am I the boy's body or the middle-aged person's body or the old man's body? Which body am I if I'm my body? So we're not, Krishna is saying that we're not touching actually this material existence. And then the question comes, well, why am I experiencing material existence? Okay, now you can raise your hand if you'd like to answer this question. Yes. Your new name is Lior the Brave. Yes.
I was thinking about a desire.
Yeah, what kind of desire specifically? Yeah. Was that my imagination or you didn't raise your hand? Oh, was you? We need an impartial witness here. Isn't it funny how we become afraid immediately? Sorry. So it's a fact. It's our material desires. Because, and what is a material desire? It's a phrase we use, a material desire. It means that tendency manifests in so many differing ways to interact with the material world in a spirit of enjoyment. That the material world is meant for my pleasure and I am meant to enjoy it. Its existence is meant for my pleasure. We take that vision and put it on people, we put it on animals, we put it on matter, dead matter. And the reality is, it is not possible for the eternal soul to squeeze enjoyment out of matter. So the point that Krishna is making here is here, listen to what he says. For one who is meditating on sense gratification, change your ringtone to something spiritual, like a cow mooing or something. For one who is meditating on sense gratification, material life, although lacking factual existence, does not go away, just as the unpleasant experiences of a dream do not go away. So if we have our mind focused on enjoyment, we will be caught in the midst of material life continuously, always. And as a reaction against that, we may want to pull back. I'm not going to make this attempt anymore. because I'm attempting to enjoy, but my experience teaches me that I suffer so much. My anticipation of enjoyment is all I have, but ultimately it ends in not fulfilling my expectation, my anticipation. So therefore, Krishna says, O Uddhav, do not try to enjoy sense gratification with the material senses. See how illusion based on material dualities prevents one from realizing the self. When the mind is always trying to grab hold of matter, seeing it as an enjoyable object, then one can't perceive oneself as separate from matter. So again, this is more the jnana path, but still it's powerful and it's important to understand. And therefore, the material dualities prevent us from realizing the self. When our life is focused on icha dvesha samutena, I want this, I don't want that, I don't want this, I do want this. This person is my friend because he helps me get what I want. This person is my enemy because of he stands in my way. This I like, I don't like that, I do like this. This is life for most people. It's a succession of involvement in the mental involvement in dualities. I want, I don't want. These dualities, being caught in that, bewilders the living entity and entangles him into experiencing. He's projecting his sense of self on something that's not him, and therefore he cannot see his own self. But Krishna goes on, and this isn't the exact point that ultimately I'd like to speak about. And then Krishna says something very extreme. He says that it's possible, even though neglected. Now think about the last time you felt neglected. Insulted. Think about the last time you felt insulted. Ridiculed or envied by bad men. Or even though repeatedly agitated by being beaten. Think about the last time you were beaten. Tied up. Think about the last time you were tied up. Or deprived of one's occupation, spat on, or polluted with urine by ignorant people. Think of the last... So I told you he was speaking in a very extreme way. One who desires the highest goal in life should, in spite of all these difficulties, use his intelligence to keep himself safe on the spiritual platform. So Krishna is saying that a wise person, he is so aloof by the power of his intelligence, he doesn't identify at all with his mind when these type of occurrences happen to him, and he's able to extract himself from the natural mental reactions that naturally occur when these type of things happen. Insulted, ridiculed, envied, neglected, agitated, being beaten even. So he's saying that it is possible to have lost one's identification with matter so much that these things don't affect one at all. And therefore, by the use of intelligence, again, this is the jnana path that he's describing, one can keep himself safe on the spiritual platform, not interacting mentally with this world of matter. So then Uddhava asks a question. Please explain this to me. This sounds so amazing. If someone slaps you or insults you right to your face, or and you don't get involved mentally with that? How? Please explain. How is this possible? The conditioning of one's personality in material life is very strong. And therefore, it is very difficult even for learned men to tolerate the offenses committed against them by ignorant people. And then he says, only your devotees who are fixed in your loving service and who have achieved peace by residing at your lotus feet are able to tolerate such offenses. Now, is this just a sectarian statement that only the devotees actually have the power to do this? You cannot do this, be aloof, just by the power of your own intelligence, because one's nature, one's personality is too strong to overcome these reactions of matter. But he's saying that your devotees can do this. So in Sanskrit, he's saying, Santams, Tvadharma, Charana Alayan, those who are so peaceful because they are residing at your lotus feet. That's the Sanskrit term. Santams te charana charanalayan. Those persons who are so peaceful, so satisfied, they have such internal satisfaction that nothing disturbs them. And that satisfaction occurs by being residing at Krishna's lotus feet. So that's the end of the 22nd chapter. What I wanted to read more of was the 23rd chapter. And that's called the Song of the Ivanti Brahmana. It's quite an interesting pastime, and it will take us probably a few days to go through it. It's very instructive. And there's many things I would like to say about it. And try to bring it to the practical, a very practical point I'd like to make. I'm not sure we will have full time, but I would like to. So Uddhava had said, how is this possible to, by the power of one's intelligence, to extract oneself from these, from this type of involvement, mental involvement in the material world, which brings the physical involvement in the material world. Adisya manasyam disya upasevate. So Krishna first acknowledges the propriety, the goodness, the fitness of Uddhava's statement. And then Krishna begins to reply to Uddhava by explaining an example. But it can happen, that it can actually happen. Someone could be so fixed. So he says, O disciple of Brihaspati, there is virtually no saintly man in this world capable of resettling his own mind after it has been disturbed by the insulting words of uncivilized men. Krishna says that. So therefore many, and it's also said in the Bhagavatam and the American, early American patriots, that's what they're called. Yeah. Patriarchs, that's something different. Okay. That's from the Bible, right? And yeah, okay. So he said that Benjamin Franklin, he was quite intelligent, he said that the words that someone may speak to you in an insulting way, they are worse than an arrow. They pierce more deeply into the heart than an arrow does, because an arrow can be pulled out and the wound will heal. But if someone speaks to you a terrible, you know, something really insults you and it really pierces, in other words, there's enough mixture of truth in there that it goes right in, right into the heart, you can remember it with the same pain like 20, 30 years later. it simply doesn't go away. And when I was teaching, I remember, in my own defense, I will say I was quite young and inexperienced and didn't have much training, but so in my trying to teach students, young boys mostly, and sometimes I had to experience the reaction by 15, 20 years later, a student coming over to me when they were adults already and saying, "Do you remember the time?" And I couldn't remember the time mostly. And "You did this and this. Do you remember?" And I couldn't remember. And it was, you know, for me, it was just something I did. It was completely insignificant. But it so deeply went into the young boy's heart that he remembered it 20 years later and wanted to remind me about it. And that happened quite a few times, actually. And then one day, also, I was Gauravani, you know Gauravani Kirtaniya, because I taught him when he was quite young. I was in and one day I met him in the manor. I hadn't seen him in years, and he said to me, "Burijan Prabhu, do you remember the time?" And I said, "I'm sorry. Whatever I did, I didn't mean it." And then he said, "You had taken the class to Washington, D.C., and we were going to perform a drama for Janmashtami or something. I really didn't mean it," I said. And he said, "And there was a cow in the drama. And you made me," and there were we took a cloth and put it over two boys, and he said, "You made me play the back side of the cow." And I said, "I'm really..." "Please forgive me." It's a true story. And then he said, and I was crying. I was like, "Oh boy, I'm really in for it now." And then he said, and I was crying, and you put your hand on my shoulder and said, "Gauravani, it's the backside that gives the milk." And he said, "Thank you." So Krishna, understanding that these things would happen, explained how the words that we somewhat unconsciously speak to others, we can pierce their hearts with those words, and they don't come out easily. And he said, even for a saintly person, sharp arrows which pierce one's chest, this is Krishna speaking, and reach the heart, do not cause as much suffering as the arrows of harsh, insulting words that become lodged within the heart when spoken by uncivilized men. So very interesting that Krishna is saying that those who speak in this way are uncultured, uncivilized. So that's in a very important point, that we should become cultured. There's in Confucius's teachings. Confucius was walking with some of his students, and one of them said to Confucius that the Duke of Wen, was so careful that he would think three times before speaking. Before saying anything, he would think three times. And Confucius replied, "Twice is sufficient." or once, or at least one should think before one speaks. So now Krishna is going to say something. He's going to tell a pastime, a story. My dear Uddhava, in this regard, a most pious story is told, and I shall now describe it to you. Please listen with careful attention. So this is going to teach us the methodology from a true story of that it, to show that it's actually possible to extract one's consciousness so much from the world of matter that one can tolerate anything because of the depth of satisfaction that one is feeling because of him having so completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Because there is so much sweetness in taking shelter of Krishna that nothing can pierce through that sweetness because of the depth of one's satisfaction. So Krishna begins, and this is again the song of the Avanti Brahmana. Avanti is a place that is now Ujjain in India, in northern India, Madhya Pradesh, middle India. Have you been there? So Krishna begins. Once a certain sannyasi, you know what Ujjain and Avanti Ujjain is most famous for? Yes, it's where. Yes, say it. Yes.
Krishna was studied. So King Arjuna from the original Jagannath.
Oh. I wasn't thinking of that, but I was thinking of this is the place where Sandipani Muni had his gurukul, his ashram, and Krishna and Balaram went to study there for how many days? 64 days, and they mastered everything, all knowledge in 64 days, and they acted, Krishna and Balaram acted just like perfect brahmachari students at that time, so respectful to their teachers. And their teacher was so qualified. Yeah. Krishna evoked so much paternal affection from Sandipani Muni, his teacher. Then the relationship was perfect. And then he would give him knowledge, give him, because a brahmana, a teacher, he has studied the scriptures, he has lived his life, and he has gained in his life jewels of knowledge. And he will take those jewels and give them to students who pull from him affection. So, once a certain sannyasi, Krishna describes, was insulted in many ways by impious men. However, with determination, he remembered that he was suffering the fruits of his own previous karma. I will narrate to you his story and that which he spoke. And that the words that he spoke, it's in the form of a song. So it's the song of this Avanti Brahmana. So what do you remember from that last verse that I read? He summarized the whole thing. Krishna summarized the whole thing. The sannyasi, okay. He was insulted in many ways by impious men. They got pleasure from insulting him. However, with determination, he remembered that he was suffering the fruit of his own previous karma. That these people who are insulting me may be the stick, but it's ultimately the Supreme Lord, actually, that is holding, the one who's holding the stick. So someone who's more ignorant blames the stick as the one that's giving him the pain. And it's true, the stick has done it. But it's ultimately, it's coming from the person who's holding the stick. So he saw that the stick may have been these people, but behind the stick, behind the suffering that's been put upon me, is me. Due to the improper activities I have performed in this life and in previous lives. And he was determined, he was fixed in that consciousness. So Krishna then says, I will narrate to you his story and that which he spoke. In the country of Avanti, there once lived a certain Brahmana who was very rich and gifted with all opulences and who was engaged in the occupation of commerce. But he was miserly. He was a miserly person. He was lusty, he was greedy, and very prone to anger. So we examine the mentality of a person who is like this, and we understand that there is no satisfaction in his heart, and he's looking in the wrong direction to gain satisfaction. He has a certain amount of money and a certain amount of wealth and other opulences, so, but they're not bringing him satisfaction. So how does he react to that? By trying to get more and more and more and more and fill his consciousness with the idea that he possesses so many things and they are meant for his pleasure. And the more I get and the less I let out, the better. So therefore, because he was dissatisfied, he didn't have any internal satisfaction because of his materialistic, selfish consciousness. He was lusty. He was greedy. And because these don't bring satisfaction, he was prone to anger, which means that when you're in someone's in a bad, dissatisfied mood, you just touch him and boom, big explosion comes. Because why? It's because of what he's feeling outside. The reaction is not proportionate to what had happened. So very prone to anger. In his home, devoid of religiosity and lawful sense gratification, the family members and guests were never properly respected, even with words. He wouldn't even say sweet words to people because he didn't want to wouldn't using words in that way wouldn't bring him any profit, perhaps, or inside he was feeling no sweetness and there was nothing in it for him and he was perpetually in a bad mood, like he had just woken up or something like that. He would not even allow sufficient gratification for his own body at the suitable times. Since he was so hard-hearted and miserly, his sons, his in-laws, his wife, daughters, and servants began to feel inimical towards him. Becoming disgusted, they would never treat him with affection, which brought him less satisfaction and caused him to treat everyone else with less satisfaction and be more angry and more greedy, etc. I need more and more and more. I need more and more and more and give out less and less and less. And the less he gave out, the more he felt he needed. And it was caught in this way by this consciousness, this wretched material consciousness. In this way, Krishna continues, the presiding deities of the five family sacrifices became angry at the Brahmana, who, being niggardly, guarded his wealth like a yaksha, who had no good destination either in this world or the next. He had no enjoyment. In this world he wouldn't enjoy, nor in the future lives would he, could he enjoy. He was setting a path down for himself that was more and more miserable. And therefore everyone who contacted him became inimical towards him, because of the hardness of his own heart. He was totally deprived of religiosity and sense enjoyment. O magnanimous Uddhava. Uddhava, Krishna is saying he's magnanimous. He's, oh, generous one. By his neglect of these demigods, he depleted his stock of piety and all his wealth. The accumulation of his repeated exhaustive endeavors was totally lost. He lost everything. By acting improperly, his piety, his punya, his piety decreased. Because what happens when you're just trying to accumulate things or in selfishness, one thinks it's all because of me. My success is all because of me. But actually, it's not because of me at all. It's my karma that brings me this. That pride is unwarranted. And this is one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga. Everyone is so proud. Everyone. Proud of gifts. If someone out of their kindness gives us a gift and then we become proud, we're foolish. So by the grace of the Supersoul, by the grace of God, by one's previous pious activities, everyone has some opulence, some ability, but it's all a gift. And just as the material nature of Krishna can give it to us, it can be withdrawn. So that's what happened to this impious, wealthy Brahmana. Some of the wealth of this so-called Brahmana was taken away by his relatives, because everyone, when there's a wealthy person, everyone smiles at him and is very nice to him, but inside everyone is thinking, how can I extract some money from this person? Especially if there's a person who is wealthy and cruel, like this person. So his relatives managed to be successful. My dear Uddhava, some was taken by thieves, some by the whims of providence, just by one's fate, some by the effects of time, and some by ordinary men, and some by the government authorities. Finally, when his property was completely lost, he lost everything. So finally, when his property was completely lost, he who never engaged in religiosity or sense gratification became ignored by his family members. Thus he began to feel unbearable anxiety. Having lost all his wealth, he felt great pain and lamentation, because his wealth, he was hoarding it, and it was everything to him. And then he lost it, and he felt he had no reason for existence anymore. And his family members, who sometimes may have been nice to him because they wanted his wealth, and they, although internally they were inimical to him, they just ignored him, because there was nothing anymore, no, they could use him for. had no hope because he had lost all his wealth. So he felt great pain and lamentation. Oh, why has this happened to me? Why has this happened to me? Oh, why has this happened to me? And his throat choked up with tears. And he meditated for a long time on his fortune. But then, a powerful feeling of renunciation came over him. So, this means that he had some previous purity in him that had been covered over by how he was acting. And this suffering, somehow or another, brought him to his senses. And that purity was awakened, and he became detached. And he spoke as follows. Oh, what great misfortune! I have simply tormented myself uselessly, struggling so hard for money that was not even intended for religiosity or material enjoyment. Generally, the wealth of misers never allows them any happiness. In this life, it causes their self-torment, and when they die, it sends them to hell. Whatever pure fame is possessed by the famous, and whatever praiseworthy qualities are found in the virtuous, are destroyed by even a small amount of greed. Just as one's attractive physical beauty is ruined by even a trace of white leprosy. So he begins speaking his realizations in this way. That how foolish I was to have behaved in this way. But that isn't going to be the end of his realizations. Let's just read a little bit more. I think I should summarize a little now. Theft, violence, speaking lies. Oh, in the earning, attainment, increase, protection, expense, loss, and enjoyment of wealth. All men experience great labor, fear, anxiety, and delusion. Theft, violence, speaking lies, duplicity, lust, anger, perplexity, pride, quarreling, enmity, faithlessness, envy, gambling, and intoxication are the 15 undesirable qualities that contaminate men because of greed for wealth. Although these qualities are undesirable, men falsely ascribe value to them. One desiring to achieve the real benefit of life should therefore remain aloof from undesirable material wealth. Now, what's going to happen to the Avanti Brahmana is more or less what I really wanted to talk about. And he is an example of what we don't want to happen to us. But if it does happen to us, we are fortunate, extremely fortunate. But it is not the recommended way to lead one's life. And this is what I mean to say, that he was extreme on this side of his materialism. And therefore, when he came to spiritual life, he went like this and became completely detached. And it is really glorious when we hear the rest of the pastime. He was had so deeply taken shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. He was so deep internally, nothing of the external world could touch him at all. He went from this side And to take the spiritual life, he went completely like this. But he was so determined. Because sometimes, if when we take the spiritual life, it's often in reaction against something bad that's happened to us. And then we go like this, and we become complete renunciants. But it only lasts a short time, and then we go back this way, and that brings us more misery. And then we go back this way, and now Boga Tyaga, enjoyment renunciation, enjoyment renunciation, enjoyment attempts in this way. And this, I saw this in dealing with Srila Prabhupada, this was not what he wanted, obviously. What we want to do, is get a strong focus on what our goal is. And we want that strong focus to burn very brightly in our consciousness. And then we want to proceed in as straight a way as we practically can towards that goal. Or if we can't proceed directly like that, as some of us who perhaps have cultivated depth of Krishna consciousness previously, and we see that, I've seen this, there are devotees who are so deep and focused, once they become awake, they realize, yes, this is all I want in life, and they proceed so strongly and straight. But some of us, when we examine ourselves, we realize that I can't proceed that straight because on this side I have some material desires and material attachments. And my desires on this side, on the spiritual side, aren't powerful enough to burn away all those material desires. So I want to proceed as straight as I practically can, not as straight as I possibly can, but as straight as I practically can. So if I can't go like this towards my goal, maybe I have to go like this to my goal, or like this to my goal, or like this to my goal, but I don't want to go like this, back and forth and back and forth and always reacting. So that, what we want to do, is lead a balanced life in Krishna consciousness. In general, this is the prescription. We want to lead a balanced life in Krishna consciousness that takes into account all the different aspects in a realistic way of who we are as individuals and what our capacity is. So I wanted to share with you some thoughts on that. We won't be able to go into it very deeply right now. But what I've seen is that to achieve balance in life is one of the most difficult things. And the best analogy that I came up with to understand it and why it's difficult is that it is like riding a bicycle. Now raise your hand if you don't know how to ride a bicycle. Yes? Very different from riding a car, driving a car. But even when you drive a car, it's the same principle is there. But we'll talk about a bicycle. What's balance on a bicycle? When you're riding a bicycle, what's balance? Is it when you're like this? Is that what balance is? Or when you're moving, you're shifted a little to the side, is that balance? Or if you're on that side, is that balance? So which is a balanced state? when you're riding a bicycle. Think of yourself riding a bicycle. What's a balanced state? Huh? If you're
going forward.
Okay, but think about it from the point of view of balance. What does it take to keep balanced when you're riding a bicycle? Huh?
You have to be exactly in the middle.
Well, what's going to happen if you decide I have to be exactly in the middle? What's going to happen? Yeah, you're going to fall over when it's time to turn left. That's one thing that's going to happen. Yes. Exactly. Balance is in motion.
It's dynamic.
Exactly. It's in motion. It's in movement. That's exactly the word. It's dynamic. You may, when you want to ride your bicycle, the first important thing is to know where you're going, where your goal is. And then, then if someone says to you, well, without telling you where their goal is, where they're going, someone says to you, should I go left or right? The question doesn't make any sense, because to go left or right is dependent upon where you're trying to get to, obviously. And then, if you're turning left, balance is like this. And if you're turning right, balance is like that. And even when you're going straight, there's always a dynamic movement this way and that way and this way and that way and this way and that way. So, if you want to be in balance in your life, which is the best way to get to your goal, accept that it's not going to be static. It's not going to be fixed. It's going to be dynamic. And what I find is that devotees are feeling unbalanced. Do you know what I mean by a feeling of not in balance? Not in balance, but an unbalanced way. And there's a tendency to look for a static, or imagine there is a fixed point that's exactly right that will keep you always in balance, but it's not like that. It's that it's dynamic. Now, this is an odd place to end. So I can't, I think. So what does it take to keep a balance on a bicycle? Once you learned how to ride a bicycle, it doesn't take very much, practically speaking. But before you learn, while you're learning, you have to be very conscious until you really get the hang of it, until you get the hang of the movements. And first, your movements are quite awkward when you're first learning. But gradually, it becomes second nature how to balance. Now, what I would like to propose is that most of us have different needs in our life. A variety of needs, not different needs. But conceivably, as we'll hear with the Avanti Brahmana, he only had one need. And that need was to fix his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna and take shelter of Krishna continuously. And he had no other need, and he felt so much satisfaction in that. Nothing could penetrate and disturb him, distract him from that. And that is perfection. But unless we are on that stage, what is recommended is moving forward in a balanced way according to our capacity. Is this clear what I'm saying? So what I would like to say is, for us, it takes some consciousness, first of all, to be aware that am I feeling balanced, or some adjustment? Is there some adjustment that needs to be made? And I think in terms of the adjustments as what needs attention in my life. So we could take, I won't go too long though, I'll just explain the basic principle. But you could say that we're composed, I'll give you some examples of the elements in a life. And this is what most everyone experiences. And and it's very, because each one of them can demand 24 hours of your day, it's very hard to keep in a balanced state. It's like if you start practicing yoga in a completely serious way and do everything that's prescribed in yoga to keep your health, it will engage you 24 hours a day. If you want to become, if you're possessed by the extreme desire to become wealthy, to the extreme, to be a billionaire, and control, it will take 24 hours of your day. If you want to fully take care of your family, it will take you 24 hours a day. So how to keep all these pieces together in our life so that the purpose being that we can ride as smoothly as we practically can towards our goal, which is love for Krishna, for the devotees in this room, to love Krishna in Vrindavan. So how to drive the bicycle of our life in a smooth way so it doesn't keep going like this when we're going forward, so it's not always extremely crashing from one side to the next, to the next, to the next, which is dangerous. It's so easy to fall over like that, and what to speak of hurt innocent bystanders who happen to when you're in a far tilt, you can knock over all kinds of people and say all kinds of things. So what we're trying to do is make the adjustments in our life as subtle and as close to the middle as possible as we practically can. So I would say that's the basic goal. So it takes consciousness, and it's interestingly enough, from what I've seen, it's not difficult to do. If you take your life and divide it up into all the parts of your bicycle, so to speak, that you require to move the thing forward, there's not that many. I don't have a list in front of me right this moment, but say we'll start with health. And remember, this is all to move us forward towards the goal of Krishna consciousness. Health, finances, practical. Family, there's your immediate family and greater family. Then there's sadhana. And I shouldn't have put that there. If I was being a good devotee here, I would have put it number one. But that's where it ended up, number four over there. Okay, so we do our sadhana, the chanting, the hearing, some service. We'll put that all together. Association with devotees, our spiritual practices, and friends, we'll say. You could probably do a better job than I just did by categorizing all the different needs into a few categories, like this. 5, 6, 7, 8. Did anyone can think of one that I've... Intellectual pursuits. Some people need intellectual stimulation, relaxation, hobbies, or something like that, you know, something that could even be used in Krishna service, or musical tendencies, or whatever. Well, health, we'll put that under health. But this is the idea. It's not like even there's 10 or 50 of them. There's not like 50. You could put them all into 10 probably. Easily under 10, all these different categories, and I've done this with so many devotees. If you just who are feeling that something's not quite right. And then you just ask them, what needs, out of these elements in your life, what needs balance? What needs some attention? And of course, without the sadhana, without the chanting of Krishna's names, without the association of devotees, without the hearing of shastra, the bicycle doesn't move forward towards the goal at all. So that has to be very prime. But just think for a moment, what in your life, you don't have to raise your hand and say, but what in your life to keep your balance needs attention right now? Raise your hand if it's sort of obvious to you which of these elements needs some attention. Raise your hand so I can see it. Well, I'll raise my hand because I know for me. Yeah. But it's usually it's pretty clear. So what we're trying to do is if like every week or practically every day you take a little bit of time, and the systems we worked out for this to make these points more clear, to just, if we're conscious, because you can't do everything at once. If you're conscious, if you become conscious of this point that we want to keep in balance and make as gentle as adjustments as we practically can, then we can move forward. The Avanti Brahmana, he was way on this side, and he went completely on that side. But he did it with such depth of determination, and he held to it. And if we could fully take shelter of Krishna, who and never look back, who will complain? But what we want to avoid is this kind of a thing. We want the our life to go as smoothly as we can forward, with requiring as least adjustments as practical. Sometimes if you're riding your bicycle and a truck is coming, you might have to go like this very quickly. So that's emergency type of thing, and you can't avoid that in life. But as we're going in our regular type of a way, we try to go as smoothly as possible and make the adjustments as less extreme as we practically can. So that's sort of what I wanted to say. Anyone have any questions on this? Yeah.
Seems like there should be a mechanism to point to help us to realize it's from someone from outside, a guide to help us in balance.
Yes, of course, that can help very much, but it's even. But before that, the guide will teach us even how to be conscious ourselves, just like in the riding a bicycle. No, generally, people start with someone helping them ride the bicycle, but the goal is that the person picks up the idea of balance by himself, like that. Yeah. So, and just imagine how difficult it is for the guide if everyone's saying, "What balance do I need? What 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 balance do I need today? What do I need today? What do I have to do today?" So what we want to do is become conscious ourselves, and then if we have a trusted guide, when he sees that we're tipping over and we're not aware of it, and they bring it to our attention, then that's also there. But we want to learn how to be conscious enough to do it ourselves too. And as I've tried to demonstrate, it's actually not that hard in a simple sense.
How is balancing thing related to the process to nishtha?
Nishtha, I would think, is is when your balances are fixedness, it's minimal like that. And this is really the process to get to that point that we're talking about. And the essence of it is, as I was trying to say, is that if we hear and chant properly, then the pedals are moving, and it's so much more difficult to keep balance when the bicycle is moving very, very, very slowly. But the quicker the bicycle is moving, then the balance is more easy to obtain. So we want to gain some speed to do it. That means spiritual strength. Your legs have to become strong and pedal properly, spiritual strength. And also, it's very and without the sadhana, without the association of devotees, then the goal of where you're trying to drive your bicycle to, if we don't hear the Bhagavatam, if we don't associate with devotees, if we don't chant Krishna's names, then we will lose sight of the goal, and then we could be completely balanced but going in the opposite direction. Does that sort of, or did you want to ask something else?
No, that's about what is this nishtha that makes you.
Well, I would say it's a combination of speed and focus on the goal. That will make it strong. And also it takes some expertise. Very much it's nishtha means your desire is focused and the consciousness is pure enough to be able to do that, to be so strictly focused. And not using this analogy, but it's having the purity and have made the decision, this is what I want and I don't want anything else. I'm not going to be lured. I don't want this. I don't want the things of this world. It's a fixedness. I want to serve Krishna. I am Krishna's servant. So that's again, you're going at a certain speed. You've developed some expertise in your balance, and you know exactly where you want to go. The details may not be fully clear to you, and as one gets closer and more advanced, then the goal becomes more clear, and therefore Krishna is more attractive, and therefore we pedal even still faster. Again, the point is what we're trying to avoid is this kind of a thing. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
Can I ask a question about Fola?
Not right at this time. But at a different time. Just let's see. Yeah.
Do you know the story of Satchidananda Maharaj with the bicycle?
I've probably have heard it before. Did you want to tell it?
One point that he said that when you try to ride a bicycle, he said, he told a story about when he was 5 years old and he gave them a bicycle as a present.
Yes.
Then he went out, he took him a few days to try to understand how to ride a bicycle, and then he said one point which was very interesting. He said that you have to look on a distance point.
Yes.
And not look, because if you look, where are you right now, you get scared and you cannot catch the balance. If you look on the goal, on the right, on the distance goal, then you catch the balance, which is, I think, a very strong point.
Well, what I would say on that is, you don't keep your mind on the furthest point where you're ultimately going to get to fully. You have to know where you're going, but you don't keep your mind exactly where you are. But you keep your mind actually a bit ahead,
forward,
a bit forward, a bit. Not right where you are, but a bit ahead, and not.
Yeah.
You know, if you're only thinking, you're driving home, and you're only thinking of home. Who knows what you'll crash into, right there. Yeah.
There's the gold service, and this is the ultimate goal of the service, and the small goals that don't seem to be, I'm not sure how they connect, like achievable goals, I want this to happen, I would like this to happen, I'm striving for this. How to?
Well, those should be in the perspective of, first of all, it's not just service, it's devotional service. This is for Krishna's pleasure. Because we want to put it everything in our life in that perspective. This is for Krishna, because otherwise the false ego will become dominant in achieving the goals, and then we'll tip over because we won't be balanced properly. But we should keep in mind why we're doing it, and it's devotional service. It's not just service. It's not just work. It's not just an achievement. It's for Krishna's pleasure. So you're riding your bicycle and sometimes your first goal is you have to turn left. So you keep that in mind, but you know where it's all in the perspective of where you're really trying to get to. What do you think? Does that... Huh?
I have more questions, but yeah, if you make...
Yeah, we won't have time because otherwise we'll go too late tonight. But just one more, if anyone has any. Yeah.
Could you elaborate a little bit more of what to do when the goal gets obscured? When it was the goal? I'm not sure.
Well, just take the example. You're driving somewhere on your bicycle, in your car, and suddenly you forget where you're going. So what should you do?
Stop.
What should you do?
Look at the map.
Okay, let's say you're going to look at your map. So what should you do before you take out your map and start looking at it? Yeah, you should stop for a little bit and try to figure out what you're doing and who you are and where you're going and what you really want to get in your life, etc. Because if you lose that, you'll get lost, for sure. Because then you'll think that, in the terms that Ram used, you know, you have your short-term achievements, and then you have your long-term achievements. And if you forget your long-term achievement, your short-term achievement will become everything, and it will become out of proportion. And you can get really lost. And we don't want to get lost. Some of us don't mind the adventure of getting lost, but it's not a very efficient way to travel.
There's a saying that if you're not aiming anywhere, you can't get lost.
Because you're always lost. You can't get more lost. But the only way to lose the ability to get lost is to be at the goal. Then you're already there. So when you're in Goloka Vrindavan, doesn't make a difference where you go left or right, you're already at the goal, so there's no question of getting lost. Anyway, it's a concept of how I think about life and keeping balance. And why is it so difficult to keep balanced and to keep conscious of what do I need and then do it? Why? Does anyone raise your hand if you know the answer to this important question? Yeah.
We call it takes lots of effort all the time. We need to be conscious that we do effort.
Okay, but what stops us from being conscious?
Desires.
What mode of material nature are desires born from? Passion. It's passionate ignorance. The balanced state is goodness. The mode of goodness. And because we're so infected with passion and ignorance, it's just so we can't avoid the back and forths and the back and forths. So the basic Krishna conscious lifestyle is one of goodness, to help us keep as much as we practically can in goodness, because goodness is the balanced mode of material nature, where one sees things in the proper perspective and one isn't so, I mean, so many times, I mean, I'm doing something on the computer or something and it's, and I have to do something else, and I've just said I'm only going to do this for 10 minutes and it's already 2 hours, and you know, and just the being beaten and driven by these modes of material nature. So then the next question is, okay, what happens when you understand that you're heavily influenced by the mode of passion and heavily influenced by the mode of ignorance? And every once in a while, the mode of goodness pays a surprise visit, and then, like a guest leaves very quickly, or something like that. So, what do you do? So we chant Krishna's name sincerely. We become humble. Pray to Krishna to help us understand that our position is precarious. Even we sincerely want to get to the goal. And we see our bicycle is somewhat broken. We should take care of it and then move forward as best we can. Okay, we should stop now because it's already late. So maybe I think maybe one other day we can continue with this topic. I find it so interesting. How to... Because some practical methodologies are... or conceptions, at least, we've spoken about to help us move forward in a graceful way that less injuries occur in. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Bhakti Vinod Ki Jai. So just think about these concepts, and next time we talk about it, see what questions you have. We can almost start with questions. Let's see if you can try to apply something. Just ask, what do I need? What needs more attention in my life? And without the desire to get to Krishna, without a goal, then... whichever way we go makes no sense, left or right, if we don't know where we're going. So then where does the goal come from? Where does the strong desire from the goal? That comes from the association of devotees. That comes from sadhana. That comes from hearing and chanting. That comes from the worshipping the deities. That desire to get to Krishna. Okay, Hare Krishna, thank you.